All right, everybody. Before we go into our small groups, what did you take away from last week's classes about the meaning, you coming to your own understanding and relationship with the meaning of this invocation that we say, as a feeling for you, as something inside you? Yeah.
I'm glad you brought it up, because I keep wanting to like set up a one-on-one with you or something to talk about it. A lot is coming up for me with this, and I have so much resistance to it, and I spent this week, like, this was the heart of my homework this week, was being aware of my resistance to it, trying to kind of break it down and like, okay, what, you know, like in the class, I didn't make the mom's class, so I listened to the recording. Like, you kind of broke it down, like, oh, Great Spirit, what does that bring up, you know, for you, or for me? What's the feeling that I get from that? And I went through each one, and I'm caught on the words. I'm caught up on the words. Like, that's what I kind of finally like settled into, that I resist the words, and I'm not sure what to do about it.
Well, I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you brought that up. So let's do this, because here's the thing. I could just let you say anything you want at the beginning, and ultimately it doesn't matter what you say in the beginning. Ultimately, it doesn't matter the words you use. What matters is that you open to something bigger than you. This is a meditation. This is a formal meditation practice. You open to something better than you. Bigger than you. And that opening is not just about you. It's about sharing. It's about keeping a flow. And the story I like to tell about this is there's a place in the Mideast called the Dead Sea. And it's if you're a Christian, you're familiar with it. It's a Dead Sea. The reason it's called the Dead Sea is because water comes in, but there's no outlet. Now, I want to preface this by saying I am not a geologist. I have never been there, but I've been told this by several people. So I'm speaking as if it's truth. But if some of you know something I don't, then I full-heartedly acknowledge this is passed on information. Okay. But so here's this big body of water surrounded by land. And water keeps coming in, and nothing can leave. So what happens over time is, because there's no outlet, the water comes in, it evaporates, it gets more and more condensed. And I believe there's a bunch of salt in it, right, from the land around it. So it's salty, and it's so salty, nothing can live. Dead Sea. Nothing can live here. If there was an outlet, it would be a whole other story. Comes in, goes out. Comes in, goes out. There's a flow. Everything stays alive and well. And so the metaphor for us is, if we open and we just boom, me, 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 like this, it doesn't work. Doesn't work. It just gets like this. Share it. Send it out. Give to other people what you want. Share it with others. Suddenly you're in the flow. You're in the flow, and the grace and the light, it's you thrive. You thrive. And so this opening of a meditation is about opening to that flow, opening to something bigger, and in one way or another, wishing goodness, eternal wisdom. May we all unfold in eternal wisdom and unselfish love, right? And there are many different ways to open meditation, but those are the two principles behind it. So what if we look at this invocation as that? And let's find the phrases that help you open and the phrases that help you share it. And so what I would suggest is for each of you right now to have something to write with. And I want you to put it into your own words. So I'm going to tell you, so, oh great spirit, saints and sages of all religions, all places, all times. In other words, whatever is bigger than me, that's been around, and that has been the seed that has blossomed into religions and philosophies that have benefited people, not the religion that men, and I don't mean just men, I mean humans, have created. As some of you took the astrology class, so you know David. David said yesterday, he was on a thing, and he goes, religion is created by men. Men have pockets. And when men have pockets, they, right? Greed, power, money, and religion is no longer religion. So when we say religions, we're not here referring to man-made power structures that kind of control and dominate people. We're talking about the underlying truths and wisdom that we're all here seeking, right? I mean, there's a truth here. It's like we were saying earlier, you were saying the Bradley method, and John Kabat-Zinn founded it, and people in the Eastern traditions, Herbert Benson. It's like, this isn't, somebody didn't make this up. This is something that people have realized, it's a common truth. This is how we relax ourselves. This is how we can calm the body, quiet the body, and work with the body in harmony, right? Okay, so does that give you something? So write down, if you were to say in your words, oh great spirit, saints and sages of all religions, all places, all times, just start there. What would you write down instead? It could be just like, oh life. What is your word for that? What is your word for that? Does everybody have something? I see some of you are pondering.
It's
not a word I usually use, but definitely I see ponders. Yeah, Agnieszka.
Do you want us to write it down if the invocation as it is works for us? Do you still want us to write something else?
If the invocation works for you? No, you're fine.
Oh. Yeah. I use this.
Actually, you know what might be, what might work is just so you have put something in your own words, because this is a very formal, handed down through, you know, the lineage. If you were to say it in Agnieszka words or Kathleen words, what words would you use? It might be the same. it might be the same, but if it is the same, then what's the feeling it evokes? What, write down, what is the feeling it evokes inside you? Does that make sense? Like we did in the beginning, it's a sensation, it's a feeling that you really don't have words for.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that feeling is what matters. And let's just take a moment. My own precious Ishta Devata. So you know now that your Ishta is your most intimate relationship with the divine. And it is already within you, but we're so obscured with the distractions and all of this that we've lost touch with it. Mm-hmm. So we're going from the to the personal with my Ishta. And then we have the line, sweep clear the obstacles on our path. And that might just be, help me get through this shit. You know, it's like, what are your words? You know, what are your words? It could just be help, you know. And lead us to the other shore of that ocean of awareness. You know, in just simple language, it's like, whoa, help me to figure this out. Help me see this differently. Help me break out of my old patterns. Are you following where I'm going here? It's like, let's take it out of the loftiness and bring it into a simple feeling, a simple awareness that is easy for you to touch. And then we come to that line, help us to awaken in all aspiring souls your eternal wisdom and unselfish love. Now, eternal wisdom and unselfish love may not be what matters to you. Help me to awaken all aspiring souls the kindness that cultivates relationship. Those are words that are symbols for helping you by helping others by helping others, you're really helping you. That is implicit in here. What you do for another, you do more so for yourself. What you do for another, you do more for yourself. And so we do this for others. Not that we're trying to control their lives or tell them what to do, but by our working through our judgments, by our taking care of our side of the street, by our rowing our own boat, we become of benefit to other beings. And that in turn, all that goodness that we're sending out actually fills us even more. And there are principles behind this, but we'll get into those a little later in the course. But so, sometimes we come to that line and people are going, well, who am I to awaken wisdom in somebody else? Holy shit, I'm just this, you know, who am I to do that? I mean, I had that for a long time. And then part of the trajectory is recognizing that we're all human together and you are no less than anyone.
Karen, could you repeat that? I didn't get the last three words, please.
The growth when we look at, I don't feel worthy of saying these words. Who am I to awaken in any aspiring soul? I'm an aspiring soul. What have I, you know, who, what? When we, as we work through that, we just show up for it, we just notice it, and on its own, it takes us to a place where we recognize that we're not less than anybody. We're not more than anybody. We are all in this together. Did that,
yeah. Yes, thank you. I did not hear. Thank you. Very helpful.
So there are a lot of really core principles that guide us to the calm, the contentment, the peace, the enlightenment, the joy, the balance that we're seeking, right? And they're contained in this, but an invocation like this carries the power, the vibration of the lineage it comes from, which is the Kriya Yoga lineage I come from. When I'm with my Tibetan teachers, there's Tibetan, well, we say them in English, but well, actually we say them in both. But there's other invocations, and they're very different words, but they're doing the exact same thing. Opening us up to something bigger, finding a personal relationship and connection, and then I don't want to say asking for help. Recognizing that there's more that can support us, and that we can attune to that support, and that as we share it, as we bring this into our lives, we don't hold on tight. This is just for me. We share it. We actually grow into exactly what we want to become, into what we're giving. Did that help at all? Has this helped? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even last week during group meditations, that getting into the feeling of it was because I was so, I resist so much of the words of it. I couldn't get to that feeling. It was just walls. And so having some background, having this information, like where did it come from? Where, what's the, why were these words chosen to represent this? You know, like it helps me to get past the words, actually. So it's like, this is super, super helpful for me. Like, it's going to still be a journey for me.
It is, April, and it's an important part of your journey, because I think my experience has taught me that when we can move out of the words are what called the vision, the words are what cause you're wrong, I'm right, nope, it's not like that, that's not what it's saying, and those words divide and put up walls. But if we can find, and this is what I would hope for all of you, is that this little exercise right now has given you the tools, not that you're here right away, but you will get here. You can talk to literally anybody about their God or beliefs or non-beliefs and find this. And find this. And the greatest teachers can talk to somebody, and if it's a Jesus person, they talk Jesus. If it's worshiping the sacred cow, they talk the sacred cow. If it's worshiping Mother Earth, they talk Mother Earth. If it's worshiping Buddha or Avalokiteshvara, you talk, because they understand that it's not about those are symbols. It's about the feeling of love and connectedness, mm-hmm. and finding that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my hope for us with this, is that, you know, let me ask you something quickly. Would it be of help to bring in someone who can maybe explain a little more of the background of the Christian tradition, in a way that might help you break out of some of the misinterpretation that comes from Christianity? I see one nod.
I'm. What do you mean by that? Like, help me understand what you mean.
Well, I have. I studied with a man who was a Palestinian whose family was kicked out of Palestine in the 50s, right? When Israel became a country, and they relocated to Egypt. And so he grew up speaking Aramaic, which is the original language that the Bible was written in, right? Mm-hmm. And we studied with him for several years, and when you hear what this was and how it's been interpreted into Greek and into English, but what it actually means within the context of the culture he was raised in, it blew my mind, and it just opened up so much. And I would be more than happy to ask him to come in and talk with the group. And if it's not something of interest to the group, then maybe it could be one of the workshops. You know, you each have to do two workshops. If you're interested, I would love to. I haven't seen him in years. But it changed my relationship to Christianity fundamentally. And it took me from being not a lapsed Catholic. What's the one where you hate Catholicism and you won't even talk about it? Ramon, do you remember the word for this? There's a name for us. Not you maybe, but for me, it's like, no Catholic, no Jesus, don't mention that word to me, right? I can't remember. Recovering Catholic is what they called it. And it just it brought me back to where I was able to get all of this, and it shifted a lot. So it sounds like that might be of interest to some people. So I'll go ahead and look into that, see if we can get him in the summer, do a little workshop.
Yeah, because I have just my own a lot of resistance to. You know, with a very, because of a very traumatized, you know, past with Christianity, it's that created so much trauma. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, it's a hang up. I recognize that it's a, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the obstacle, right? So, okay. So I will get that worked up and then, but it doesn't sound like there's enough interest that I'm going to bring it to the whole group. I think we'll make it a separate thing for those people who are interested, right? Because I'm not seeing a unanimous interest. Okay.
Well, I think what's going on for me is it's like, I don't have a feeling whether I'd like it or not. I just think anything new is valuable. So, you know what I mean? I'd be interested because it'd be like, well, let me see how I respond to that. Like, you know, it's not that I'm not interested. I just don't have a strong feeling about it. Like,
I feel the same way. I would be interested, definitely.
Okay, well then let me see if I can bring him for one of our meetings then, specifically for our group. Okay, and I'll tell you this in advance about him. We had a nonprofit for about 7 years called Tea and Cookie. And the point of it was to bring people of different traditions together over tea and cookies and learn and just learn. And we had a Jewish rabbi come in and Hanny come in. And Hanny was so, I don't know the word, he literally dissolved any stuff that was coming from the rabbi, right? And then when we were closing, after seven years, we decided to close it because nobody wanted to work hard enough to do the fundraising needed to keep it going, right? And for our final event, we had two swamis that were our favorite swamis and Hanny come together for a dialogue. And somebody brought up a question about forgiveness. And the swamis, now these are advanced swamis who know shit. They know stuff, right? And here's Hanny. Hanny's not a scholar. He's studied this stuff. He grew up in it. And when it was after the responses to this question were intellectual swamis, heart from Hanny, and the whole room was changed because of Hanny's response, which is basically the man has lived forgiveness. He has lived forgiveness. It's in his bones, in his heart, in his blood. He has worked through the hate of having their land taken and all of that, right? And it was a totally different teaching than the intellectual teaching from the swamis. It was mind-boggling, and the swamis were staying with us at our house, and then the morning after, before we were getting ready to take them to the airport, the wife says, well, I guess Hanny kind of showed us, huh? Because even they got it, right? So you know, we'll bring him in. We'll bring him in. I think it might have helped bring a lot of understanding and healing and maybe help remove some of these blocks. And yeah, Ramon.
Karen, did you guys happen to record any of those sessions or not?
You know, we did, actually. And when we closed the nonprofit, I believe somebody kept those files. Hmm. Ah, okay. After the wedding, I'll take a look.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, we did. We did record them. Yeah. Huh. Okay. Good point. Okay. So now that we've had a little diversion, but this to me is a most fundamental skill for us as a meditator, is to be able to translate into the underlying truth words. And so with that, let's divide you up into two groups, and you can decide amongst yourselves who's doing what. Do you guys remember what they are? Find your seat, person, which is become present. Invocation. And then the resurrection breath. And after the resurrection breath, the person doing three-part breath can just begin. The find your seat person is going to hand it off to the invocation person, right? Because they won't necessarily know. Three-part breath will be obvious when they're done. Just give it a rest, a few moments to just enjoy the after effect. And then breath to soften and release person will come in. Do a little bit of that, and then they will hand it off to the person who's doing the closing. And you can close with any way you want to. All right. Okay. So, any questions? All right, guys. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those days. I thought this was going to be a really easy day, and I'm getting the sense now it's going to be one of those days where you guys are going to go, whoa, that was a lot. So let's get you into your groups. Here we go. Oh. everybody's back. I was in my own little world there. How long have you guys been there? You just got here?
Yeah. About 10 minutes.
You're just watching me sitting here. Next time somebody say something. Karen, we're back. So how was that? How was that?
I'm still getting used to it.
Fair. Mm-hmm. Fair. Fair. So I want to really stress that you can't do it wrong if you just describe what you're experiencing. And some of you will say, and I'm feeling this, and I noticed I happened to be in when Steve was doing his, and he was saying, and you do da-da-da. But he was describing what he was doing, right? And it's not important to me whether you say I or you, just as long as you are describing your experience, right, and getting used to that, because you can't go wrong with that. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. You literally can't go wrong with that. And so part of this authenticity is if you can just show up for the technique, start doing it, and describe what you're doing it, you're good, right?
I think it's hard. So,
yeah.
Describing the three-part breath, though, is tricky because you can't do it at the same time that you're describing it. And so I would sit in meditation and I was verbally describing it and realizing that I'm talking way more, that people can't hold their breath that long waiting for me to describe it all.
Exactly.
So trying to describe all the sensations of the three-part breath in a short amount of time so that someone can follow along is tricky. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you capture it in the normal span of time that someone's going to take an inhale and an exhale?
And so what have you learned? Can you?
Nope.
You can't. And so you preface it by saying go at your own pace, or when you're teaching it, you break it down into each piece, right? And then as you're guiding people, you just choose one or two things. Sometimes you say nothing so they can, right? And so what's important here is that you, and I was there for a bit of what you were doing, April, which is that you can kind of be in your zone and still talk. And the skill you're developing is to be aware of the technique while your mouth is saying something.
Yeah.
And this is a big skill, right? It's a big skill. It takes practice. So how many of you are feeling, do you all know what I'm talking about here? Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. All right. Kelsey, were you going to ask something?
No, I had pretty much the same thoughts that April had, where it was like, how do I do both at the same time?
You don't, right? And so, yeah, so it's just that simple. There's no magic. And I will at some point, we'll break it down and I'll maybe give you some my thoughts on what's important to say. But ultimately, I don't want you to use my thoughts on it, because you want to, every time you teach it, you are going to show up fresh in that experience. And what we want to learn to do is to trust that when I'm with this group and I'm talking about three-part breath, that the thoughts that come to my mind are the thoughts this group will resonate to. Remember how, in thoughts, we're talking about the thoughts are all out there? They're all out there. You're not creating a thought. So when you, and we're learning this in the context of teacher, but this is in the context of your life, of your world. This skill makes a huge difference. When you're in that sort of zone, the thoughts that come to you are the thoughts that are in the room with you. So if you are sitting there and the thought comes to you, your attention suddenly goes into your lower back. Then you go, so when you breathe into the belly, you might also want to think about breathing into the lower back. Three-part breath doesn't mean just forward in the belly. Three-part breath is the fullness, right? You're breathing into your chest and you're really aware of the chest lifting and the shoulders being down. And that's what you speak of. You say, three-part, as it comes into the chest, keep the shoulders soft, let the chest open. That's all you say. Because that's what came to you. Are you following me here? Which is why what we're doing right now, you learning to describe your experience, is while you're in a getting more and more comfortable doing it from a meditative state, is not only training you to be a teacher, it's training you to be more aware of what's going on around you in your world. And you all know it, because you know that there's times where you know what somebody's thinking, right? So, any other thoughts? Yeah.
I just have a question. When you're experiencing, you're describing, all of our eyes are closed, but are yours sort of open, or do you have yours closed too?
Great question. For now, keep your eyes closed because you're not teaching anybody, right? You're just describing you. When I'm teaching, I often have my eyes closed. However, I do open them, which is where sometimes my eyes are open and I can see that somebody's chin is like this, which point, you know, lift the chin, or I'll see that somebody's like this. And just remember to tuck the chin, you know, and so you can get cues because you can see what people are doing. So it's both. But I'll tell you what, you'll be able to leave your eyes open more. The more you become used to being in the zone as talking, you'll be able to be in the zone and talk and still look at what people are doing. Right? I think this group might get there. You guys are pretty amazing. So any other comments or questions?
I wanted to bring it up because it's on my mind and I wanted to know if it resonated for anyone else. But something that's been challenging for me is talking about my own experience when we're in the group. I almost feel like I like have to talk to the group and lead them through it. Like that, I don't know, conjunction has been hard for my brain to get around, and I find it distracts me, right? It's like I keep feeling like I have to do this other thing instead of just focusing on myself. So it's just been really interesting to watch, I guess.
Oh, well done. Anybody else having that same push and pull? Yeah.
I just feel like if I let my mind go into, okay, now suddenly I have to lead, I will freak out. So I just keep talking about me because that, like you said, it is what's happening. So, and I can hear that within the group. There's a shift between, you know, those of us that are probably more comfortable just reading or directing, you know, and it's interesting because I'm an educator and I've led many, many, many groups. But this realm makes me nervous about doing that. So,
thanks for saying that. Yeah. And so several others of you have raised your hand. What's going on with you? Yeah, Agnieszka. Yeah.
I just wanted to say how I appreciate you telling us that we're just sharing our own experience, because this completely took the stress for me away.
Mm-hmm.
Also, when I teach yoga poses, I have to look at people, and I feel so responsible. So I have to really watch and what needs to be done. But here, I don't care. I care for you all, and I do care deeply. But I can just, I have no responsibility here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not teaching. I'm sharing my experience and. And it's helpful to be kind of relaxed, because like you said, there's no right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate it very much, and it's helpful, and I'm going to take it into other areas of my life too.
Nice. Well, and that's Ramon, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if it's, I don't know if Steve's going through the same thing as guys. I don't know. It's a little bit difficult sometimes to kind of express what you're feeling. And I am, out of everyone, I don't want to say everyone, of all of my friends, at least, I can tell you that I am the easiest person that can do that. I can express my feelings the easiest. So I wonder if it's just, if some of this is also, you know, kind of resistance to kind of talk, you know, to do the guy thing and not really talk about your feelings. I was just wondering from Steve, are you feeling some of that, or is that kind of just unique to me?
Well, I mean, I think it's a great question, Ramon. I think that for me, I'm just not really uncomfortable anymore sharing my feelings. I've just been, which is really neither. I mean, that's just, it just kind of is what it is, because I've just sort of had to, not that others haven't had to, but, you know, I've been in a 12-step for, I mean, over 3 decades. And so I don't think I'm really uncomfortable sharing my feelings. I think I'm finding, you know, at least like I guess in kind of the recent discourse with this group, I'm feeling less necessary to share my opinion and feelings, which I think is a good thing for me. You know, I just don't, it's like, you know, it's just not as important. And although there are times when things really, you know, when I think, okay, you know, you really need to share this maybe or ask this question, not to impress the group or to maybe, you know, because this is probably something that you need to look at so that you can just get value out of it. Yeah. Instead of all your other freaking ego-driven BS, yeah. That, which is not to say that I'm great at expressing my feelings either. I just think, honestly, I don't have a real discomfort with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see. No, that's interesting. Yeah, and I don't think it's so much. Like I said, I think, you know, I've done a bunch of stuff so that you do have to kind of speak up and express your feelings. So, but it doesn't seem, you know, when I speak to my wife, it just doesn't seem as natural for me to do. Like, it takes a while. You have just to prod me, just be like, come on, guy, tell me, what are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And then I eventually can open up, but it doesn't just come like naturally.
Well, Ramon, I'm going to just sort of say, you know, I'm married to a Pisces, mm-hmm. and you have a lot more in common with Bill on that level, let me tell you. So, you know, and so I think there's an element of that is male, sure. An element that is Pisces, sure. And it's also, there are other people in this group who are finding it difficult. And so I'm going to give you a way to look at this that will help to maybe open up, is you're not sharing your feelings. We're making a real distinction here. Feelings and emotions are often used congruently as the same thing. In meditation, and I don't do this 100% of the time, but there's feelings as emotions, which are going to be called emotions, and a feeling, which is a sensation. It is that we did at the beginning of the class where it was just, what is that feeling of opening up to something? What is the sensation you get here or in your gut when you soften and allow yourself to open up to something bigger? Some people, it becomes, it's an activation, something, you feel something, but there's no word for it, which is why it's not an emotion. And some people, it's scary. It starts to tense up because that's not safe, right? And so what we want to do is not put a word or an emotion to it, but start to look at it as a feeling, as a sensation. So when I'm asking you to share what you're experiencing the sensation. And so that's safer. You don't need to, it's safer. Stay in what is physically happening in your body, right? letting go of tension, feeling more soft, feeling, you know, relaxed is a word that down the road you won't use it a lot, because it's you will use more descriptors like soften, open, letting go, things like that. But what if we stay in those kinds of words? And that's for everybody. It's not an emotion. We're not walking down that road. This is just literally, this is the purpose of the body scan. This is why we're doing this. What is literally happening in your body as a sensation? Because we as Americans are absolutely, again, that's strong, but we are pretty out of touch with what's going on in our body. Mm-hmm. And our body is our best friend. It knows before we know up here. It knows everything before we know it up here. But we've been trained to just shut it off, not pay attention, and that's what we're opening up to. And it's not easy. So I want you to know this is not simple to say, okay, what is happening when I do my three-part breath? I don't know. I mean, I could name a bunch of you in here who took a long time to come into your body and recognize what you're experiencing. So this is normal. This is normal. We're just on a bit of an accelerated course. Accelerated course. Does that help, Ramon, to think that it's not an emotion, it's an actual just a sensation in your body?
Yeah, that's a big shift. That's great. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Excellent.
And Kelsey, I meant to say this when we are in our small group, but one of the things that Kelsey did at the beginning and spoke from her experience is that she connected with each part of the three-part breath. So our first breath was really one in the belly, one in the chest, one in the collarbone. And that was really helpful for me, like, because I've been doing it so long that if I was new, that would be like, oh, what, that's what I'm doing with my collarbone, you know? So I actually found that really helpful.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I had this thought process before we came back from break, and I was like, I want to do it this way, but it's not exactly how Karen did it. I'm nervous. Is it wrong? And so it feels really good to hear somebody be like, actually, that was helpful, because it's been so helpful for me to, like, first get a sense of what each part is doing and then add them together has worked for me. So thanks, Brenda.
Bingo. Bingo. Mm-hmm. Did you catch it? This is what Kelsey is doing, so she did it with you.
Mm-hmm.
We will learn how to teach it later. Mm-hmm. But it's shallow if you just learn, if it's just a formula, this is how you teach it. It's rich and it's real when you have been having the experience and you can go, oh, this is what I do. And it doesn't matter what I do. It doesn't matter what I do. I want to know what you do, what works for you. Mm-hmm. Does that help?
Mm-hmm.
So Brenda, thank you for saying that, and Kelsey, because I think that gives, I think you're starting to grasp what we're trying to do here, which is open you up to have your own experience, trust that experience, and share it with us. Be in it enough that you can actually go, oh, this is what I do. Oh, okay. When I do breath to open or release, I tend to always go to this one spot. So, okay, I'm just taking everybody into my shoulder. We're going into my shoulder. It's really tight. And I'm taking the breath in. And I have to, in order for me to make it work, I have to imagine that it's really warm. Because otherwise I can't grasp this idea of my breath in my muscles. So I'm thinking of it really warm, and then I let it become like liquid butter, and it just kind of opens things and softens. You know what I'm saying? It's whatever you do. Share that. So maybe as you do your practice, we're going to keep the same simple sequence you've been doing, right? Just invocation, resurrection, breath, three-part breaths, breath to open, release. And it rests in joy, because that after effect, after the technique, that moment where you sit there, that's the moment, right? And then for this week, for this 2 weeks that you're off, I've already mentioned I wanted to have you outline the body scan and start to have a sense of it in a way. You can't do it wrong. Please understand this. What do you do if you had no video, no tapes, no iTunes, no recordings, no script? What works for you to just keep moving through your body? Some of you, it may be, I'm literally in my scalp. I'm in my forehead. I'm in my eyebrow. I'm in my eye. I'm in my eyelash. Some of you are like, dude, I'm in my face and then my neck. And I never remember my arms. And I always just go down into my chest. And, you know, and then I stop in my shoulder blades because I can find those. What do you do in your body scan? Start to just come up with a pattern that you can do on your own. And you'll be surprised. Everybody's just going to be different. And this one you can do laying down at night. Literally, you're just laying in your bed, right? And you're like, oh, okay, oh, let me start to just pay attention to my body. Pay attention. And as I pay attention, how long can I stay in my awareness there? What helps me to stay there? What sensations am I feeling, experiencing? Okay, now where does my mind want to go next? And sort of do it as an exploration. And you notice that by just bringing the mind, this is kind of an uncanny thing, I still haven't figured it out, just by bringing the attention to an area of the body, it softens. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can say, now soften your big toe, soften your foot, but somehow just bringing your attention to the soles of your feet, your toes, the top of your foot softens. It's this little magic thing. Does that make sense then? Everybody got the intention here is for you to find a sequence that works for you. Okay. And then the other thing I'm going to ask you to do over the break is to, and I'll get these sent out. They're here, but Darcy will get them posted tomorrow. And I'm sorry, we're working out a system to get them to you ahead of time. The problem is I don't usually write them until right ahead of time. I'm trying to get them to her by Friday. If you ever get these handouts beforehand, it means I got them done before Friday. And it's like, kudos me, right? But so, this is all going to come together at some point down the road here. But for right now, you're working with the sensations in your body, becoming present, sustaining that attention, which is softening the body. We are also going to start moving into two other techniques. One is Hong Song. And so I want you to just watch the two tutorials. There's two tutorials, Hong Song level 1, level 2. Just watch them. One's 4 minutes, one's 11 minutes. You can listen while you're walking the dog. You know, that's fine. And then there is a meditation. It's just a short little meditation of Hong Song. Okay, so basically, I just want you to introduce yourself to Hong Song. This way. And then at the same time, there's a tutorial for pranayama called Ujjayi breath. And they are exactly opposite. One is passive, let the breath breathe you. One is really, really refined control of the breath, right? And there's levels and layers of Ujjayi breath. And so what I'd like you to do is just watch the tutorial in Ujjayi breath. I think it's like, I wrote it down somewhere. How long is it? Like, no, I didn't write it down. It can't be that long. It's like 8 minutes, you know. Practice it. Start practicing it. See if you even can kind of get there. We'll be working with it in the group meditations in the next series. But so the intention. So we got several things going on now. You're learning to become present in your body, aware of your body, without any judgment. Showing up for it, sustaining attention. You're learning what it is to have a pranayama, which is where we control the breath, right? We consciously control. So resurrection breath, sipping breath, three-part breath, breath to soften and release. These are all pranayamas. Hong Sa is not. Hong Sa is... let the breath breathe me. absolute surrender. And it is the primary technique that we teach here at HMSA. Primary technique meaning the technique that will carry you all the way. All the way. All the way. And so I'd like, during this break, if you could just familiarize yourself with those things so that we come back, we're going to kind of, we'll speed it up again and kind of bring all of this together. And at the end of the series, we'll learn a really beautiful technique called Tonglen. And this is all kind of prep to get us there. So with that, are you full? Do you have any questions? Got anything else? Are you wiped out? Yeah.
I just have a simple question, which is, maybe it's not simple. What does pranayama actually mean? I've heard you say it so many times.
Oh. See? This is why it's so, thank you. Yeah, I should explain that. Okay. Prana is traditionally translated as life force. Prana in some traditions is chi. It's, what are the other names for it, you guys? I'm blanking right now. Chi. Energy. There's a few other names in other traditions, but they're not coming to me. But basically what it is in the Eastern tradition, we are not here because of oxygen. The breath contains prana, which is the energy of life itself that is in every single minuscule molecule particle of everything is prana. And that life force enlivens consciousness. It enlivens the physical plane. And it is the energy that transcends this plane. And yama is control. Control. So when we are breathing pranayama, they'll say often it's breath control. Mm-hmm. Controlling the breath, controlling the length of the inhale, the exhale. There's lots of different pranayamas. They make you feel great. Mm-hmm. But it's really, really a prelude to controlling your energy. Yeah, you can control the breath, but can you control your temper? Yeah, you can control the breath. Can you control your thoughts? Yeah, you can control the breath, but can you control your consciousness? And prana infuses all of this. All of this. So pranayama, we do it, we're learning it with the breath, but it's more than the breath. It's so much more than the breath. It's so much more than the breath. So does that help?
Yeah. Thanks, Karen.
And I would actually open it up. We've got two yoga teachers here. We've got Lisa and Agnieszka. I would actually be open to see what they want to bring because they study pranayama more from the actual eight limbs of yoga, which we will talk about later down the road. Do either of you have something you want to add? Or a way you look at it that might be helpful?
Nope. It's very similar to how you described it. It's how I... when I get asked that question.
What do you say when you get asked?
Prana is breath. Usually that's where we start if it's a beginner group. And we talk about, you know, just breath control, lengthening the breath in very simple ways. Inhaling to the count of two, but then maybe exhaling to the count of three. I mean, it's playing with it in really basic ways. But I liked how you added it's the prelude, and that's not something I talk about in class.
And you wouldn't in a yoga class.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. Not to beginning students, yeah. Okay. Agnieszka, what about you?
Well, I don't really use that word in beginning students' classes because they come for the poses. So I still teach three-part breath, or what else do we? I mean, we do all kinds of pranayamas without calling them that. But my primary teacher, and I really like that he talks about that asana is really a pranayama because, like you said, it's a control of life force. And by doing certain poses, what you do with your body, it's also you control the life force that's, so through our posture, through the breath, right, through so many ways how we express that life force in so many ways. So pranayama is really that's how we, at least I guess, express the life force within us.
Lovely.
I like that. Like you said, it infuses everything.
Yeah. So. Thank you. I love hearing it from the different perspectives. So I'll tell you one little just fun, intriguing thing. Since we're not going to do my last meditation. We're kind of changing things. So let me tell you a fun story. It's a true story. So and I may have already told you, if I have, stop me, because I don't often tell it, but this is the kind of context I would tell it. You will be asked to read over the summer an autobiography of a teacher or of somebody, right? And sometimes people will choose Paramahansa Yogananda, who is in my Kriya lineage. He is one of the yogis. And he wrote a book called Autobiography of a Yogi. And at the end of the book, there is the coroner's certificate from when he died. And because he had so much prana in his body didn't decompose for, it was at least 10 days or 2 weeks. It hadn't even started to decompose. Yeah. To me, it's like, and it's the coroner, the LA coroner. It's a certificate from him validating this, because he had left, his consciousness, his had left the body, but there was so much prana infused in the tissues of his body that it didn't decompose. So I don't know. I just kind of find that just one of those beautiful little fun. Wouldn't it be fun to have that much prana in us, right? And I do know that the more we do this, the more we work with pranayama and meditate, our vibration shifts. And people who can see things like light and your energy body and things like that can see the difference in you. And I know for me that when I am, like right now, I'm pretty depleted because I've been working so hard and not getting a lot of time off. But when I'm not and I have prana, I can be anywhere. And if there's a baby, they're right on me and they won't stop staring at me. And I know it's because the light is so strong, right? And then there's times where I'm feeling like right now and nobody's looking at me. They're all looking around at somebody else. You know? It infuses us. It gives us vitality and it literally lifts our vibration. And the more prana you have in your system, in your being, maybe is a better way to put it. Prana is what enables when you are doing Hong Sa. You know, we breathe Hong Sa and we start to settle into what we call the breathless moment, that pause, where there's no compulsion, right? It's just a pause. Well, Hong Sa is the training wheels. It's the vehicle that is going to take us to what is known as samadhi, which is the breathless state. And for us to have that experience, when it's the prana that sustains you rather than the physical breath. And it's a real thing. And my hope is that the retreat that you will each have, even if you just have a flash of it, where you realize you have no, literally no compulsion to breathe, but your body is alive, your mind is alert, your awareness is there, and you can just rest. And, you know, 1 second, 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute, you know, and it's like, and you realize, Kriyananda said, the reason this is important is because that is when you realize that you are not this body. It is not the oxygen that is what keeps you alive. It's consciousness. And prana, prana is that life force, that consciousness that enlivens all of this. And my hope is that you will at least have a taste of that before this training is through. Because it's real. It's real. I mean, if I can experience it, you can experience. And I have, it's not like I experience it now. You know, it's like I experienced it back then when I was still ranting and raving and not exactly being ascended. So,
is this like a technique that maybe the deep sea divers would use? When they don't, it's not holding their breath, they go to that breathless state, maybe?
I think, you know, that's a fascinating question, because we had a mom in the mom's group. Her husband was a, what do they call him, a deep sea diver?
Yeah.
And free diver. And for a while we were meeting in his shop when we didn't have a space. And they do pranayama as part of their training. But I don't know if when you're actually holding your breath for 3 minutes and moving, I'm blown away by that. But I gotta feel that it's the prana, right? And training that's helping them do that. That's a great question, Lisa. Maybe if I think of it, we can ask Jamie or April. You guys, sometimes when Jamie comes to Mom's Class, let's ask her about that. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We'll look into that. All right. Kathleen, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I've had that experience a couple of times when I'm in meditation and all of a sudden I realize I'm not breathing. Yeah. And then I'm like, and this just happened this week. Shouldn't I be, I was questioning, shouldn't I be breathing? I went back and forth with myself, but I didn't feel like I needed a breath. So I just, that's interesting you brought it up. It was weird.
Yeah. And that's what happens is you're going to hit there. And the very first time it happens, you're going to go, I should be breathing, boom, and you're knocked out of it. And then eventually get used to it. And you know, and it's just a very, we're training you. When we do pauses are training you for that moment so that when it happens, you won't be shaken or scared or popped out of it. You're going to recognize it and go, oh, I know this. And then you realize you're still floating in it a little longer than normal. So this was a nice little diversion. This was a little later on the agenda, but we got to it today. So I hope that was fun. And so, yeah, one more, and then we're going to have to go. Yeah.
Well, this is just a quick thought that I wanted to share, because I can't remember where I read it. If I went through all my notes, if I find it. But I can't remember if it was one of the assigned reading or if it was one of those open a page and, you know, get a moment. But I was reading about kind of the reasons that people might come and seek meditation, and then also just for myself. And it was really stuck with me to say that I'm not meditating because there's something wrong with me and I want to get better. That it's just to be like, and I don't know, that just really resonated that sometimes, you know, I think some of the pressure that I put on myself for this is because I have to improve. I have to be better at it and to be just accepting that this is just what it is.
Yeah, that's Kriyananda's thing. And I think hopefully you've read it. It's that we're not meditating to get anything. We're meditating to let go of things so we can discover the being that's already there. Thank you, Brenda. So, okay, well, let's close with an Om Shanti. And I'll see you all I'll see you next week, some of you in class. So find your seat. Let that breath come into the heart center. Feel that sense of opening as the breath expands? And what is underneath the sense of physical opening? Whatever that other feeling is, tap into that. Tap into that, and let's carry that into our Om Shantis. Inhale. Om. For Shanti for yourself. Shanti. Second Shanti to each other. Shanti. And let's let this third Shanti, let's send it with a smile to fill all of your homes and infuse your homes with this same vibration. Okay. Shanti. Be blessed, everyone. Be blessed. And we'll see you either in class next week or in 2 weeks with a bald head. Okay. Okay, everybody.
What's class next week? We have class next week?
You don't, Steve, because you're on Thursdays. But the Monday, Tuesday people do. And then we'll see each other again on that following Sunday. Okay. Good night, everybody. Goodbye.